And our school board makes a decision on a Tuesday night, it's enforced tomorrow, right? Council, commission does something, days, weeks, right? The governor, weeks, months, president, could be years before something is actually enforced in our state that came from D.C.
Man, that's downright mindful.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
We just become best friends.
Yup.
We don't make mistakes. We have happy accidents.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I don't need backups. I'm going to Harvard.
Remember these words. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Do or do not. There is no try.
I still have a dream.
Welcome to Downright Mindful, a meeting place where we explore meaning, seek connections, and examine the relationships between people, events, and the ideas that shape our world. Hosted by me, Matt Paris, my friend and colleague Paul Sauswell, each episode we'll dive into thoughtful conversations that spark reflection and curiosity. Thanks for joining us. Now let's get right down to it.
I mean, there's psychology to that.
I know, but when I hear that, I'm
has
like...
Has he pushed record yet? Because, I mean, like, we're educating the people in psychology.
I don't know, but like...
Yeah, bring it. Bring the heat now. Come on. Look at the arms crossed. Like, I'm really diving into this.
But I've literally heard that sentiment brought up by a speaker while I was doing this and was as engaged as I've ever been. You know what I mean? So, I always thought, is that true?
I don't know. I taught a team leadership program. I mean, they sent me all the way to Houston, and they taught us... to teach kids about body language and about finding their voice. And now let's go give speeches. And I mean, we get 30 seconds, so it seems. You get 30 seconds. Like your nonverbals, the way you're dressed, the first sound of your voice. I mean, these are all the first impressions that stick for quite a few encounters.
So do you use that? Does that ever cross your mind when you're communicating with students right now?
Not if it's the middle of September, but in week one it does. And when I meet adults, I'm conscious of my nonverbals.
Gotcha.
I'm conscious of my tone of voice. Yeah. Because I really do. I want to give a good first impression.
For sure.
But if you stay in that space, I mean, that can be a really shallow existence. It could be like my insecurities are flaring up and I want to make sure I please people. I've lived that life. But now I just want them to know that, like, I'm legit. Like, if we're in this space for a reason, like, I'm going to Memphis next week, right, to present. I'm going to be very conscious of my nonverbals. I'm going to shave. You know, I'm going to think about what I wear, that kind of thing. And in the end, none of that matters. Because once I'm 12 minutes into that presentation, none of that matters anymore. What I'm wearing, my hair, my face, doesn't matter. Have I brought anything that can keep their attention?
Yeah.
So I better bring some content. So I'm bringing Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Go ahead, you're about to say something.
Well, I was about to say, you know, in the police academy, one of the things that they used to get after us about was sunglasses. And at the time, maybe I didn't have the vision to see, like, what's the big deal with sunglasses or whatever. But I realized later on that police interactions with people come very quick. And a lot of times you don't have 12 minutes. You got 3 minutes, and the first 30 seconds of that is a big deal to somebody, especially like we're talking the victim of a crime, and they're waiting, all their physiological response to stress is happening, and you roll up on the scene, your nonverbals are a big deal. The second you step out of your car, like you're shaving and you're tucking your shirt in, and those nonverbals that you're talking about, they would call that a command presence.
So what do they say about sunglasses? Sunglasses?
Sunglasses send just a bad first impression, according to the people who taught me, and I tend to agree with them.
I would feel like that as a civilian.
I can roll up with sunglasses, but when we go to speak, I'm going to take those sunglasses off.
Yeah.
And that's me. I noticed one of the things, and I didn't pick this up as a police officer. I picked this up as a teacher. I used to, sometimes, I would have my phone in my hand. And for those of you that can't see me, I have my phone in my hand right now. And I would do this kind of thing. And I would put my hand down, but I got to where I don't even like that. hey, I'm sending you a message right now.
Yeah, for sure.
My phone is invisible now. You can't see it. And that's just a nonverbal that like, you have my attention. You're, what you're saying is important, more important to me than my phone.
It means a lot. I mean, like, what if we went to lunch and I put my phone down like this compared to I put my phone down like this?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a thing. I mean, I noticed that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or even back to the sunglasses part, like, unless someone is my friend, I don't like talking to people with sunglasses on. I want to see their eyes.
That's right.
If they're an acquaintance or less, stranger, like, I really want to, like, I want to see who these people are. I don't know. Either that's quirky or we're on something, but...
What if it's not a pair of sunglasses? What if it's a little more serious and this is a police officer with his hand resting on his weapon?
I don't like that.
You know what I'm saying? You don't like that. Maybe he means that. He's just looking for a place to rest his arm. But to you who don't know him and you only have a brief impression of him, that's not a good one. Yeah. You know? So that's where the sunglasses becomes the little thing that causes you to pay attention to bigger things.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
I go to SROs. Think about the first impressions that they give. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, Paul Severa, he didn't teach me. He showed me the importance of an SRO.
Yeah.
Like, being in that space and interacting with people and the way that he did that, you know, when I reflect back, I can see nonverbals. I see his smile on his face. And, I mean, I've come across, I don't know how many SROs over 23 years of teaching. Some, man, they can be there quite some time and never, ever connect. And I think a lot of it has to do with just not being approachable. And those who are approachable, man, they're a real asset in the school.
For sure.
It's closure. Sure. Yeah.
That's a, man, we could talk about SROs for hours. You know, you know me, that may be the way we met. Did we meet in basketball or SRO?
I think it's more SRO. Remember I had that office down in that closet, second floor, at a co-ed? And you come in there and we talk like fifth grade basketball because our boys were playing.
I can tell you exactly where it happened for me, where I officially met you. You had talked Ron Spangler into letting some students eat lunch outside. You remember this?
Yeah.
So I hear about it. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, and I thought, well, if there's going to be students there, like, I want to be there. Yeah. So I came outside, and that's where I met you. I think we knew of each other. I knew of you from our kids, but... Yeah, that's kind of where we started talking. The SROs are a big deal, man. And they're, you know, I think sometimes, you know, there's several schools of thought on SROs. The original reason for an SRO is community policing. It's to build bridges, to build relationships, and to make connections like you're talking about. So,
how long has it been since you were an SRO? Give me a year.
I would say 2014, I'd say 10, 11 years.
So watch this. This is coming from a personal place. Could you see yourself being an SRO again? I mean, you've lived multiple lives since being an SRO. Like, I couldn't go back into a dorm and be an RD again. Like, Sarah and I did that the second year of our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it seemed like a brilliant idea. But the second year of your marriage should not be spent with 96 freshman boys. Because it shouldn't.
What?
I could go back and be a custodian again. That was my first job. I could do that. I could take a job cleaning right now. Not have any problem with that at all.
No, because here's where I go. I'm going to answer that. Yes, I could see myself being an SRO again. But I can tell you what took place within me as an SRO was I needed, I just kind of needed a little more. Like, I fell into a routine and a groove as an SRO, but I needed to solve some more problems, to innovate a little more. I needed a fire to put out. You know what I mean? So maybe if I was an SRO, I would transfer to a high school or somewhere where there's more adult-like people that maybe need a conversation or need a connection.
Could you see yourself being a detective again?
Yeah, I mean, Detective Act absolutely met that need.
Could you stop being a teacher right now and going back and be a detective again?
Could I? Is it possible?
Would you? That's a more fun question. Would you?
Of course I would, but we're going to have to go straight to like a money conversation then, because while teachers aren't the most wealthy people in the land, they, you know, if I went back today, I would have to take a considerable.
You get paid more being a teacher than a detective?
Bro, I was a 14-year detective at the sheriff's office, and the day I signed on with Bradley County Schools, I got an $11,000 a year pay raise.
Josh Morris.
That is insane to me.
That is ridiculous.
Because, like, a detective, like, you're protecting.
Buddy, if somebody broke into your house, they would call me, and yeah, I would come there and put that person in prison.
That's a big responsibility,
that's
and
a huge
I think,
responsibility.
Like, you
the
should make
skill
more.
Set that exists no. to do that job, that's crazy that you
at,
just said
at
that.
At one time, before that, when I was 12 years, when I went to, I was a drug detective. If your loved one overdosed on fentanyl and died, they would call me to try to make a murder 2 case on that. Try to figure out how he got this fentanyl.
I mean, that's wild.
People not know that?
No, I don't think I knew that.
So
no
people don't know that.
No one knows
no.
that. No one knows
Or
that.
I thought it was pretty close. It's I didn't not. Think there was going to be, you know, 11 grand.
It's not close.
Public service.
Wow. It's. I will say it's closer now because of some work that was done by our county government, and they've sort of closed that gap a little bit.
Well, it's even now, like firefighters in the same boat, and I think they have helped a little bit on that, right?
Yeah, firefighters are getting help as well. It's now if we're talking about pay scale, like ladders, that's where the difference came the most. Because if you compared a year one teacher to a year one police officer, that gap's probably not so crazy. Okay, but as you know, teachers get a pay bump every year, and police officers do too, just not to the degree that teachers do. So the longer I'm there at the time, not now, but at the time, the longer I'm there, the greater that gap is. See?
So you're saying SROs, they're still the sheriff's department. They're not employed by Bradley County.
SROs are essentially patrol deputies that have gone and became certified.
They're not on our pay scale.
No, they're paid by the sheriff's office. That started out as a grant to get police officers in schools, not from a security standpoint. This is pre-Columbine.
I've been teaching 23 years. Mm-hmm. How long have SROs been in Bradley County schools? Because I don't think they were there when I first got there, but Vaughn Johnson.
They were, yeah, they were there.
She was my SRO.
Now, it was a very young program then, and yeah. At its beginning, they were called school-based community officers, which means I am a patrolman. For instance, the first one that comes to mind is John Stone. I talked to him right outside your class the other day. That's the first school resource officer at Black Fox Elementary School. Okay, now he's the chief deputy of the sheriff's office. He only answers to the sheriff.
That's crazy.
He's a great guy. He was a school-based community officer at Black Fox, which means he's still patrolling the Black Fox community. That's his area. That's his beat, if you will. Yeah. But he made an office at Black Fox School and began training in community policing and what SROs are and, you know, high-fiving kids, teaching a DARE class. Mm-hmm. That was a big part of it, and it still is, I believe, in elementary school. That's when it started, and that would have been probably mid to late 90s.
Yeah, I remember in the late 90s, like when I was in 5th, 6th grade, the SRO, or not SRO, the police officer would come in and would do that, the DARE program, and then it would go out back on patrol, and then would come in like once a week.
Yeah, so that's the way a lot of it started, and a lot of it was federal grant money with plans for the local governments to catch up with that. You know, we'll give you this grant and you put this many officers in your schools, and then by this year you have a plan fiscally to make those payments, to pay those officers yourself, which we've been fortunate that our community placed a priority on it. Now we have one in every campus and two in some.
So that makes me think, like, school counselors and school psychologists in the last decade have gotten grants to be in the schools, mental health awareness, and, you know, just giving opportunities for kids. I wonder when that's going to finally stick, where our school counselors can actually counsel and not do all the other responsibilities that they do. I wonder, you know, because, I mean, a grant runs out, and I've watched really good people leave our building because their job wasn't funded anymore. And that goes all the way back to ACOE as well.
Yeah, I think we're kind of in the early days of you seeing a new position created in school administration, which, you know, our traditional guidance counselors, because of the task at hand for them to build schedules and advise students and do all of the sort of administrative work, we are having to lean on mental health, especially post-COVID. Man, post-COVID, this stuff is, mental health in schools is a big deal, and our government at certain levels is placing a big priority on it, and that's why you see these new faces showing up.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that pairs along with when we talk about school safety and you know, it recently these threats and this and that. The SRO and the mental health professionals are often at the forefront of that conversation.
Yeah.
So what that looks like, I don't know. 10 years from now, is what I'm saying true, and you have sort of a new position in a school, or are we still calling these people guidance counselors? I don't know what that looks like.
Now, I don't know how long this has been going on, but now in my position, I get to go to elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
And in the elementary schools, those counselors are going into classrooms and doing lessons with their kids, and they have like a weekly rotation. They're going in, teaching them things, talking about things. And so I wonder if that's like going to trickle eventually to secondary, to middle school and high school. If that'll be, I don't know, a class or a rotation, or just to help with those mental issues that we're having and post-COVID things.
Yeah.
Well, it was always a priority when I was at the middle school teaching related arts, of getting the counselors in the classroom so their face can be seen and their voice can be heard before they go see a counselor for an emergency.
Yeah, because, I mean, those kids need that relationship.
100%.
Because you're not going to go talk. I mean, you may, as an adult, may go talk to some stranger about your feelings or whatever. But for those kids, they need to have that relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like I walk to the elementary building now, and all these kids know my name. And they want to hug me. And it's like I've spoken to them 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
And so that's really all it takes. And you don't realize that in the moment, but you realize that a year later. When there was a group of kids today. I was at a school, saw them as third graders, did some lessons in their room. Then as fifth graders, they're like, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time. And they're like talking to me, yeah, coming up to me. So you can tell like that relationship is key, especially when it comes to those counselors.
Yeah, I don't know if y'all know this, but there's a presidential election this November.
Mm-mm, nope, didn't know that.
Say what?
But I'm a U.S. history teacher, so I have a unique position when these things roll around. And where I always circle back around to is connecting to what we're talking about, police officers and school counselors and pay scales and all that. It's like, these are elected officials on these county commissions and city councils who make the decisions for pay scales.
Yeah.
That means those elected officials should be a higher priority of us understanding who we're electing locally than who ends up in the White House. I mean, like, I believe that with my whole heart. Our county mayor, our city mayor, and like, I mean, we can go to the governor, we can go to state senators, and like, that's a big deal as well. But when you bring everything home, like, we're just SROs, we're talking about people at home, we're talking guidance counselors, we're talking detectives, teachers. If all of this is based upon people who are making decisions within our councils, then who we elect to those positions are huge. And how many people vote in local elections? 1 out of every 4, maybe 1 out of every 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so, I mean, like, we lose our minds over presidential stuff and not have any real authentic dialogue. But I think it's, we don't have any dialogue too often. I mean, and this isn't just like, hey, high schoolers, get ready to vote. I'm talking about adults in this. We've had this conversation before.
Sure.
Of just people don't know who's on the ballot. They might recognize a name or still go with a party. But, like, do you know these people making decisions for us? I mean, our school board makes a decision on a Tuesday night. It's enforced tomorrow, right? Council, commission does something, days, weeks, right? The governor, weeks, months, president, could be years before something is actually enforced in our state that came from D.C. You know, so, I mean,
I love what school resource officers do. I love what school counselors do. And if that stuff's going to stick, then I want some people that, like, it's part of who they are and what they want to bring to their community. And it has a lot to do with their vote on a council. There's my plug for local elections.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's a big deal. It's, you know, even at the highest level of our local government, say a mayor, I have full confidence that within about 2 phone calls, I could get the mayor on the phone right now. I can't do that with Joe Biden, Donald Trump, Kamala Harris. I can't do that with any of those.
Is that a brag? Is that a flex just now by Matt Pierce?
No, you've been a little bit.
No. I'm at least 9 phone calls.
No, but I think that goes back to that. That goes back to that idea of like just being at home.
Yeah,
like, you know, you have your people that live in your house and you can contact them super easy to just talk about your issues or problems. So when you really think about like your home where you live at, your town, being able to connect with your mayor, your city council members,
it's
like,
a big deal.
It's a big deal to be able to just call them on the phone. Like 2 phone calls and here we go. It may take me 3, but.
Well, it may take me 5. I don't know. No. But Paul's on to me for bragging. He can get his city councilman to play golf with us today if he wanted to.
Ooh, that's big time.
Yeah, we already have. Okay, yeah, I got you.
I got you.
Yeah, that's fun. So what are we going to do with this podcast? How long was that?
I mean, we're still recording at 20 minutes.
We just ran for 20 minutes, buddy.
But it's like when you record and you have these like genuine conversations like we're having now.
Yeah.
Like the time doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Like I've checked it because I want to know.
Yeah.
But to y'all, it doesn't matter because you can't see the screen. But it's when you have genuine conversations, you know, just hours seem like minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just had a conversation because we share that CCR time, that advisory time in class. And so we just sat and just, this is what we do. So I can envision us bringing some structure to this.
Yeah.
And letting an audience know that, hey, this is what we're about to talk about. And let's just see where it goes. I don't know what that structure would look like or where our interests lie. But like our interests are, I mean, it's so.
Well, let's see how well we can turn a conversation on the fly. Can I do that?
Sure.
I just got the droplet form back today approving our Brushy Mountain field trip. So toward the end of October, we're going to be taking somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 students for the second year consecutive now to visit the Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary. Have you been there, Josh?
No, that's on my list to do. I might have
go with us.
I might have to go on the field trip.
Yeah,
I mean,
Mr.
Paris and
be a chaperone. I mean, we could probably, or if you want to go and film a short video, that would be. You want to be our photographer?
We might have to set this up.
I would
invite.
Love
that.
That is an official invite.
If you want to be our photographer, I will put you on the bus right now.
Let's do it. We'll get the dates and we'll see if I can do it.
October
24th.
4th, 24th. It's Thursday. But the reason that it's so valuable, and I'm going to share just briefly, and then I want to get your thoughts on it with U.S. history students. Of course, I teach a criminal justice class, and we start with like history of corrections, the history of law enforcement, and we try to stay on American soil because it's what affects us the most, and it's what literally it's a study on the criminal justice system in the U.S. It always takes us overseas because, as you can imagine, most of the professional law enforcement, the way we do things, started in countries that before America was born. So. But when we get to American soil and we start trying to do
I already have a curiosity question.
Yeah, what's the curiosity?
So 1776, we declare some independence. We had some colonies here before that.
Uh-huh.
Are you telling me there is a police force in Europe in the 1600s, 1500s, 1400s, beyond like the King's Guard?
No, we're still talking. King's Guard is a thing, but like, when you're talking in the old country in the 1600s, 1700s, you would be talking probably about like a Frank Pledge system still in play, meaning like certain able-bodied people in your tithing or your group of people in your shire, if you will. Those people were sort of bound by common law to act in a certain way should... And most of the time, you're gonna hear it referred to as a thief should someone come, a robber, come and steal food or jewels or money, and we're talking about a hue and cry still living in those times, like a thief, and now you're, it's not only because you're a good citizen that you're going to chase after that thief, but certain people in your community are bound by common law to do that. Like,
when does the badge come along?
So the badge comes along, like, if we're talking 1600s to 1700s, we're getting very close, because they developed these people called thief takers.
Are we still in Europe right now?
We're still, yeah, we're still
in Europe. We're not in the colonies.
No, we're not in the colonies yet, but now, what happens in the colonies pre-established government is parallel with what's in England, because they're rule here. Where was I? Thief takers. So these guys, they're sort of, I want you to think like bounty hunters with not a lot of rules happening.
Sounds awesome and scary.
There's certain, you know, the people that are high in that government, whether they be like a certain side of, kind of a councilman or whatever they would be.
I have Robin Hood in my head right now.
Oh, well, we're going way back.
Okay.
Robin Hood is you know, the, what was his name? His nemesis. The Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yeah.
He was the Reeve of a Shire. Yeah. Like a certain gathering of people, he's the Reeve. Now, he's sort of he wears a lot of hats. He's a tax collector. He's sort of an enforcer for the government, whatever the government is there. But he also became the enforcement of laws. Okay, so yeah, that's happening. But then you delve into, like, now we have thief takers. And thief takers, I could go and catch a thief, parentheses, whether he's a thief or not, and I could carry him to an official and receive money for doing that. And as you can imagine, just like in the Wild Wild West here, years later, some vigilantism starts turning sour, and these guys sort of become corrupt. And the backdrop I have playing in my head now is like, what's the old detective that's in the movies? Robert Downey Jr. plays him in the most recent movies. Sherlock Holmes. I have Sherlock Holmes playing in the back of my mind. The people who are dragging the thieves to the officials become dirty, and there's not a lot of, you know, a fair trial is not a thing at that time. So this guy named Fielding sort of takes these people, and he starts evaluating these thief takers, and he finds the most, the men with the most integrity, and he organizes them and sort of gives them some structure. And
give me a date.
We're in the 1700s now.
Okay.
We're in the 1700s. They're called the Bow Street Runners. That's what we know of them as now. They're the first, like, we're trying to organize this kind of thing. And that's Henry Fielding. He's probably better known as a writer than he is a father of certain policing. But so you have the Bow Street Runners, and they start responding to crimes and doing some investigations. They're very simple investigations, as they don't have, you know, what we have now on any level. But that's the way it is from then until like the mid-1800s. And this guy named Robert Peel is in the government there. And he takes the night watchman, the Bow Street Run, all of these people that are doing these things. He puts them in uniform. He has them shaving their face a certain way, wearing the same clothes, and they have specific duties. And that's literally the first police department as we know it now.
And then place that for me. Where is he? Is that England?
Yeah, that's in England, mid-1800s. Yeah. Look up the Metropolitan Police Act. He has that piece of legislation passed to get funding, and now he has a police force.
Because for me, like, I think the first policeman I can snatch out of my history brain is, like, I have Teddy Roosevelt in New York City, and he's patrolling the tenements, and he'll send a guy like Jacob Riis. Do you know that name? It's like, he's one of the pioneers of flash photography, but he goes into the tenements, and he takes pictures at night of just, like, of how
atrocious these living conditions are. And he writes a book called How the Other Half Lives, and he goes to the other side of New York City and says, hey, I want you to be aware how other people are living. Now, Teddy Roosevelt is the police commissioner at this time, and he is sending out Jacob Riis to do this work. He literally is a police reporter, Jacob Riis is.
Yeah.
And so this is like, you're in the 1890s, okay, at this time. Mm-hmm. So you're also in this German immigrants, Irish immigrants, Italian immigrants. Like, I'm curious about, like, we're eventually going to put, you know, a badge on some citizens and say, hey, this is now your job. Is there anything before New York City that you're aware of?
Yeah, Boston. Boston's going to lead the way.
Is that our first police force?
On our soil, yes. That's our first organized, professional.
I want to guess it would still be post-Civil War?
No.
Before the Civil War?
Yeah, it's going to be before the Civil War, because they're going to issue them pistols in the late 20s, 1820s. Of course, that technology helped that. We have it's either Colt or Smith & Wesson that are just kicking off at that time and sort of coming up with the six-shooter. You know, but that's, yeah, they issued pistols. And it wasn't because the bad guys were that bad. It's because the bad guys were affecting the polls. They were sitting at voting polls controlling elections, and they outgunned the police. Because the police at the time were just carrying whatever they could drag out of their farmhouse, you know. But the Colt comes along and develops some technology, and it, you know, the first time it gets brought before the city council in Boston, they turn it down. Like, no, we're not.
That's giving police officers weapons.
Yeah, like, hey, let's issue our police officers weapons, yeah. And they turn it down. And long story short, a mayor who was part of these bands that were meeting at voting polls and being threatening to people, they were doing it for a guy, and he wins a mayoral election. So the next cycle, they bring it up, and that city council, who a lot of them still exist on the council, decide, like, yeah, we wish we had done that a little sooner. So they.
So is that an American thing?
That is an
American thing. Police officers guns?
Because,
like, the British, they don't carry guns,
no,
do they?
No, especially not at that time. I don't think now they...
No, I mean, like, the British don't today, no, if I'm not mistaken, right?
They carry a baton.
Okay, was there a time when they were issued a gun and then they took it back, or has it always been that way?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know of a time when they carried firearms, but that's something I'm going to need to look into. That's where, by the time we get to U.S. soil, I sort of concentrate on the U.S., but yeah. I need to look into that and see.
I mean, everything comes from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Basically, when you tell the American story, you got to reach back
for sure
somewhere. So,
sure. But buddy, we get into the 1890s. Mm-hmm. You know what else happened in the 1890s? Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary.
Convict labor.
Yeah. Coal wars.
I was wondering we're getting back to this Brushy Mountain.
Well, I mean, we're here, brother.
That, you needed some.
We had to go pretext. Back a couple hundred yeah, years to get yeah, that we pre- yeah, predetermined
we had to,
stuff.
We had to back up and grab some information.
Yeah. I mean, Tennessee is on the cutting edge of saying, hey, let's build a prison and let's make these prisoners work. They're prisoners.
Yeah.
Now, the Constitution does say, 13th Amendment, no more slavery and no involuntary servitude. And so right from the get-go, there's going to be people saying, well, you can't make prisoners do that. That's still involuntary and it's still servitude. But then there is this clause that says something about, unless you're a criminal. So then they start making some serious bank off of the back of criminal labor. And it turns into this really terrible, shady place that, you know, it's not safe to be a prisoner there.
I mean, it starts out, I mean, before they even build a prison, they start a camp up there and start having these prisoners. And what they're doing is you know, Josh Morris, you come to me and say, hey, I got this coal mine, but it's costing me an arm and a leg to run it through labor. We could lease you, as the state, we would lease you 50 prisoners. And you would take them, you'd feed them, you'd keep your own barracks. And now, what happens is, you start putting other coal miners out of work, okay? So those coal miners start showing up at these people's property and burning down the barracks. And they're literally popping off shots and having wars. what's it called? Cold Creek?
This is the Cold Creek Saga.
This is the Cold Creek Saga I'm describing, yeah.
Yeah. So it's in this area.
I mean, that's insane. And especially, like, leasing them?
To the point they take about 50 prisoners and put them on a train and ship them to the governor.
Wow.
In Nashville.
So, I mean, do you know where Brushy Mountain is?
It's in Tennessee.
Okay.
North of us,
Knoxville?
Right?
Yeah.
Knoxville, yeah. Somewhere. I know it's not too far away from where we're at.
Go west. You've been to Harriman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Go a little bit north of Harriman.
Okay.
And you're going to get to, what is it?
Wartburg? Petros?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a pretty good hike, but it's...
Yeah, it's not
and
bad.
It's an education waiting to happen. And it is something to see Matt Paris's eyes when he walks into these... Because, I mean, he used to transport prisoners.
Yeah.
When this prison was still up and running. And to see him and I went one time before we took kids, and it was just like, yep, this is the... I've never gone past this place right here. And we, like, just took a moment and just kind of just... I could just see in his eyes, things are, like, turning. That was fun. And then we got in there and took the tour, and, you know, we caught on to that little group. Like, you can hire someone to, like, kind of give you a tour.
Give you that professional feel.
But a lot of them are former prisoners there.
Oh.
And they've got their shirt on that says when they were there in lockup. Come on now. And so we got a couple of those when we took the kids, and so...
They build a restaurant out front. They call it the Warden's Table. It's pretty good food.
It is pretty good food.
Yeah, because really, I mean, it's really built up to all these things now, right? Because now they have, like, concerts there. Yeah. Like,
it's a venue.
It's a big venue.
Yeah,
instead of just
they,
going to see the prison,
all they did
now
was
there's
went
more
out,
things.
Went out back in the prison yard and built a stage. That's where the concerts are.
Okay.
There's not a lot more to that part than
that.
But, yeah, they have done some work there to make it a museum, but the linear part of the jail is still... I mean, they probably need to do some maintenance on that thing so it don't fall in, because it's still just like it was, like they just walked out.
Wow. It was like walking into the Pi Center before they created this Pi Center. Did you ever walk in here before they did anything?
Yeah, it was nuts to walk in and, like, trying to figure out where you were at.
That's right. It's got that
and then
feel.
The walls go up and you're like, all right, I have no idea what this is, because you have that picture in your brain of, like, pre-walls.
Yeah. Mr. Spangler let me just roam around here a bunch before anything ever happened.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. Mr. Spangler would send us over here. Hey, we got some desks that we need to throw in there. Or, hey, we got a bunch of chairs over here. I mean, I can remember Ricky Henry walking over here and just bringing stuff, taking stuff out. I'm like, hey, Ricky, let's take our flashlights and walk down here. And we'd go explore a little bit until it got too dark and scary. But
it was scary. But if you ever come to my classroom, there is this marble slab. I mean, it's... And I stand on it, and I tell the kids, I'm time traveling whenever, I mean, you'll see it. I mean, it just makes sense that I'm in ancient Rome and I stand on this thing. But I found it here, and I don't know how I got it in my truck, because it weighs so much. I wanted this thing. It felt like it was this treasure. And I found it in the shadows of the Pi Center before it was the Pi Center.
Wow.
So the prison kind of feels like, oh, well, where are we? Right?
The beautiful thing about Brushy, you know, we've talked about law enforcement all the way to the old country. But the cool thing about Brushy for these students, not only criminal justice students, but U.S. history students, is, you know, it's built in the 90s, in the 1890s. And the place we are in corrections is not very far removed from, like, the William Penn and the Quakers, what they installed and what was replaced by the Walnut Street Jail in New York. I mean, you go from the first prison in America, the Walnut Street Jail, to very shortly after they build the Auburn Prison, and the way they do prison there starts spreading around the world.
Like that's Auburn, Alabama?
No, that's not Auburn, Alabama.
I mean, I don't know.
That's Auburn, New York.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in Auburn, New York. They start doing jail in a certain way. This is after William Penn dies. He would not have approved the way they did it. But it starts spreading around the world. Now, the Quakers in Pennsylvania quickly replace it with their own system. We refer to that as the Pennsylvania system. It's almost the same. It's a little bit different. And I could talk about each of those for 30 minutes, so I don't want to do that. But right in that time is when Brushy's built. Okay? So Brushy stands witness to almost all of the ways we've done corrections in the United States, because it didn't close until 2008, and nothing's really changed since then.
That is crazy to think about.
It is crazy, yeah.
That's what's significant about it for me as a criminal justice teacher, and that's what I love to have U.S. history students with us. Of course, they're all U.S. history students, but it's very cool. Like, to stand in a jail that was built to essentially do solitary confinement and prison labor an hour from my home, like, that's priceless to me.
And that's it's why a castle. I mean, it is built.
And it's beautiful.
And the frame of the castle.
It is eerily beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah, man. I'm excited. I'm good.
I don't think I can go.
Oh, man.
I didn't want to bring it up.
We're going without
you. I need to call the mayor.
You might need to.
You are one phone call away. I think you could get there. I think you got his number.
I don't have his number. I don't.
You know something.
I could get his representative on the phone pretty quick.
Yes, there you go.
But the beautiful thing about that is having the ability to do it and not doing it. So
that's true. Always hold in your pocket till you have to do it.
All right, Josh. So give us some feedback of, like, we could bounce back.
Man, I got, like, lost. I know, like, I have a microphone and y'all want me to talk and, like, have a conversation on, but I got lost today. And just listening, like, between the history and bouncing back to U.S. history and, like, just all things. Really just got lost in it.
Oh, that's fine.
I think it was a great conversation.
You're learning something.
No, yeah.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. But, like, I really sincerely think we want to do something. We want to do something. Like, we want to, like, here's episode one, here's two, here's 18.
No, I think, like...
But we need a direction.
I think you have, like, your concept for the show. Right, your concept.
What is it?
Whatever you want, but not even just like show in general, but maybe just it's just hanging out with Matt and Paul. Like maybe that's your concept. You're hanging out. Here's our conversation. Here's our topic of the day. Right? It doesn't have to be structured like most things you listen to.
Yeah, I don't think we need structure. I just think.
I think the structure you may need is like here's our topic. Here's like the couple questions we're gonna hit on, and just make sure you kind of somewhat stay on track.
Yeah. One of the fun things for some of the things like that Pete Holmes one who goes unedited and he just goes. Uh-huh. He does have questions he asks every single time. So like every person he brings on, which is something we could consider as well. By the time he gets to the end, if he hasn't asked them yet and inserted them into the conversation, he makes sure he does.
Yeah.
It's the only structure he has. And my man dominates his podcast sometimes, meaning he'll invite someone on and he does more talking than he does. He even makes fun of himself sometimes for that. But like, I don't know if structure is not the right word, but like, I mean,
no,
like,
y'all need like a loose structure.
One thing
I think
that
that's
we always
be,
ask
that's
is
what y'all mean.
Who's your audience? Like, who's your audience when you do your podcast?
Like educators, right?
It is straight educators. You're not making this for plumbers.
No.
Right?
Plumber's not going to want to know how to do like some Canva stuff or whatever.
You see where I'm going with this? Now, you could fit other people underneath your educator umbrella because if people do work in Canva, they do work with technology or they do work with apps.
So then you're hitting more of that title. So like your podcast would be like you have your overall group and then maybe your title hits certain things. Because like, I mean, there's podcasts that y'all listen to or I listen to that – you listen to these people all the time, but then you see that title of it and you're like, nah, that's not my thing today. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to waste my time.
You do that?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So but there's some people that I will listen to them no matter what.
That's true.
There's probably only two that I do that to.
But I think that's like a, it sounds cheesy, but like you're not really, but you're like building a relationship with listening to them.
I'm a fan.
Right?
You're a fan.
Like, maybe that's a better word. Like, so I don't know. You just...
Like, watch this. If we made something, who would we say, hey, listen to our podcast? And they would. Like, who would we invite to listen to?
Our wives.
I don't know if they would.
My mom.
Our moms definitely
would. Our moms will listen. Yeah.
I mean, do you have a first thought on that? I mean, am I veering away from
the
vision
like,
that you've had?
I think you can't necessarily think about your listeners, right? Because if you think about my show, right? I do tell some people about it, but I don't really tell a whole bunch, right? So you got your social media, all that stuff you'll do, whatever, if that's the path you go. Mm-hmm. But like on Apple, I have 4 subscribers. Spotify, I think I have 5 or 6. But like it's not a big deal to me.
Sure.
Because to me, it's just recording my voice, having a story, like sharing whatever. And if you want to listen to it, so be it.
Yeah, I don't think we're going
to. And it's just having that fun. Like
subscribers are...
I think that'll come. Like, if you've got enough people listening to content, like, it goes and it can be whatever you want to. But at the base of it, it's just having fun, recording your voice, sharing a thought, sharing a process. Like, it's just, that's the root of it.
Yeah. Do you give yourself a time limit?
Sometimes.
Do you cut yourself off at 20 minutes? Or
It just depends, like, because most of it's like a solo show.
Yeah.
So it's just me talking. So I have my stuff scripted out, and I don't know how long it'll be. Sometimes I talk for 30 minutes. Sometimes I get to 15, and I'm like, all right, that's all I've got today. So it just depends.
I get it.
I think the most structure that we do need, and I'm sorry to switch off of.
Nope.
No.
I think the most structure you and I need is literally a talking point, a topic.
Hey, today let's cover these four things, Matt. And we just go. And if that's 25 minutes, it's 25 minutes. If it's 42, it's 42.
Yeah, that's fine. But, like, how much of this do you want to do for your students?
I don't know.
I don't know
if I want to do a podcast for students. No offense, students.
I don't either.
They hear my voice all the
time. Do I want to be able to share it with them? Sure.
Yeah.
That's fine. But that's the schools of thought that I have to visit. Because, like, if the answer to that's yes and we want to do it for students, then maybe we look a week ahead in both of our classes, and that's what creates our talking points. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know if I want to do that first, though. It feels like, just humor me, it feels like work.
It does feel like work.
I don't think you and I need to work to do this.
And it feels like a way to alienate people who might want to listen. Because now either he's talking to his students, he's not talking to me.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't mind this just being a nerd show. I don't know if
that matters, though. I don't think that matters because, like, I listen to a guy that he just talks about podcasts, right?
Yeah.
That's his audience is to help podcasters develop into a good podcast, right? You can call him, you can subscribe, pay money, whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't necessarily listen to it for to know about podcasting. Sometimes I listen to it because there's good ideas sprinkled throughout, and sometimes I just listen because he's a fun guy to listen to.
Yeah.
And I don't get anything out of the episode. Mm-hmm. So it just depends, like, maybe, like, your favorite. Like, you've got those things. I don't know.
I think we should just start the Pause Podcast. Because you've been saying for 1,000 years, at the end of every conversation, it's not the end. Let's just pause. We'll come back to it next week. That's what we're going to do here, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a conversation. Like, again, I think...
I think
you can't worry about your
that
audience.
That made it sound
I
like
think.
It's the pause.
The pause.
I know, but I don't want that to be...
I don't know if you worry so much about your audience. I think you worry about what you want to talk about. You got to get that idea set up, and then you... Then you could tailor. I mean, that's when I set my podcast up. I just want to talk about tech stuff. I didn't care who was going to listen. I just wanted to do a podcast.
Yeah.
I wanted to have genuine conversations. And he has developed more into, like, me talking by myself in this room and those things. But I really like when you get people in here to talk about things, like a tip or a tool or the police force. Now you're having more conversations about those things.
I'd love to bring some people in. I mean, do you see that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, there's one podcast I listen to that he does his own thing, and then the next week he brings someone else in, and he does his own thing, and he brings someone else in. And I find myself basically only listening to the ones where he brings someone in.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's just...
No, and that's where I'm going, too. Like, you know, I talk to myself all the time, but I really enjoy more of people coming on.
Yeah.
But you have a purpose.
Yeah, y'all.
I don't even know
y'all
if we want a purpose. I'm just rambling about
it. No, I think y'all just want to record your voice and talk about whatever. But I think now you're in this point. Like, do you have this for you? Do you want to tie this? Not even just your students, but maybe do you want to tie it more educationally fit between your criminal justice classes and your history classes? And you want to combine that to talk about those things. And if something else sparks an idea and you talk about your vacation, like, so be it.
I'll be honest with you, if we're going to do this during fourth block, I think it has to have an educational bent. If I'm going to leave campus and come over here and do this, it has to have some sort of educational bent. Now, my heart always goes to, I'm a teacher of teachers. That's my greatest teacher. I love my students and I love being in the trenches, but I love teaching teachers.
Yeah.
So, like, to give something, and it doesn't mean it has to be educational. It doesn't mean that we're giving teaching tools. It just means if you're a teacher, you can glean something from these two fellows because they're teachers, but they're also all of this because that's what teachers are. They're teachers plus they're all of this. Did that track at all?
Yeah, more sharing of like your wisdom or your background
or our struggles
in what you teach
or our process or what we're trying to figure out. Or, I mean, maybe we just bring questions every week. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, because I don't consider myself an answer guy. I consider myself a very curious person who asks lots of questions.
Yeah.
I would love to bring some people in, and me and you just ask 1,000 questions. That would be really entertaining for me, because I hear you say over there, do this for yourself. Like, I really just want to, I mean, I want to get some reps in. Yeah. I mean, I really do just want to get some reps in. See where it goes. And we can craft it on episode 8, 9, or
15. Yeah, no, I think that's the fun part, see where it goes.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I started this, like, I'm just, I don't know, I didn't really have a big idea.
Yeah.
And then it's developed into, like, I want to have more people on the show. I want to talk to more people instead of just me talk to myself.
Yeah.
And it's become more of, like, a conversation instead of, like, bleh, here's your stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think enough of this, what we're doing right now, and we're going to figure out things that we really, first of all, enjoy, and things that maybe make the conversation really flow. And I'm not saying we'll find a niche, but we might.
We might.
You never know. We may have the, well, at this rate, we might get the mayor in here.
Listen, we can call him. Bluetooth him in the board now.
Bluetooth him in the board.
Yeah. And hey, I listened to enough of guys who started from nothing and went to something, and now this is what they do as a career because they emailed their dream list. I can think of two right now, two podcasts. They emailed their dream list of people they would love to interview, and people just said yes. I mean, they just said yes.
Yeah.
That detective in Tacoma that you've always wanted to interview because you read that article one time, and we get him on. I mean, like, and then we ask our 1,000 questions. You know, I mean, it's almost
like taking that leap to do anything.
I want to feel a little fear and like take the chance and might be disappointed.
And then it happens.
It might happen. So, I mean.
Okay. So I think what you brought up a minute ago, if we're going to leave campus, we're going to do this. I think it's as simple. I think it's very easy for us to do because you're a U.S. history teacher and I'm a criminal justice teacher. And that is a technology expert in our schools. I think we could go, I think we have some pretty wide barriers there. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. We can cover anything.
And whether I intend for this to be for my students or not, we'll always do it in a way to where we could easily share it with students. You know what I mean? Share it with the teachers. Share it with other nerds. Are you a nerd, Josh? Would you consider yourself a nerd?
Maybe. Depends on what it is, I guess.
I am. 100%.
I think I am. I'm not a nerd on like the most maximum level, because I think there's a positive connotation to that that I don't quite achieve very broadly, but...
Yeah.
I've listened to the same song about 24 times in the last 2 days. That makes me a nerd. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm intrigued.
You're not exaggerating, are you? No. You're not exaggerating. No.
No. I'm searching my mind. For
you're
like,
listening to that line again.
What is it about this line?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. Yeah, so that, in that way, I'm a nerd.
You see, we bring music into this. Totally fits what we do.
For sure.
We can cover. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paris, let's just do musical lyrics today in the podcast.
Yeah, man.
And we just bounce back and forth. You come with your lyrics, I come with my lyrics. Maybe that's what we do. Maybe. Maybe we just throw something on the table and we don't say anything else to each other. And we know on Thursday, like, this is what we're talking about, and we just volley back and forth. All right. Start us off. You're leading off today. And you throw it, and we just volley. I'm like, all right, well, this is what I had. And we just go. And like, all right. Second point today was, what'd you bring today? Well, this is what I brought. And that would be fun. Because we get to surprise each other a little bit. We get to do a little homework if we wanted to.
Yeah.
And then we would just bring it.
Yeah.
That sounds fun. And then if you put a third person in here, or a fourth person, I mean, if Josh is going to be in here, are you going to be in here every time?
Yeah, let's do it.
I mean, like, he won't know what's
going
on.
Yeah, I mean, we can add a little music there. You got music coming in out of your ears? Yeah. Like,
so I'm wondering, is this going to be the kind of podcast where we need to have a pre-recorded introduction? Because I think it does.
Because
there's going to be days where he just hits a button and we just continue our conversation. You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
I might be okay with it.
I don't know. I want to protect it. That's why I asked, do we need to do like a pre-recorded introduction? Because I don't want it to have to be you giving me a signal and saying, all right, welcome to, you know, I don't want to do that.
Do you mean like a post-production
pre?
It's something.
I mean, when we're done, we do a wrap-up, which is actually a preview. Is that what you mean?
You just want to be able to sit down. You want me to just hit the record button and we just start. Absolutely. There's no like fancy music that pops into your ears.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
There's no like pre-things.
But in post, you can add anything. All of that would be great to make it a structured
podcast. I mean, that's how I started my show. Like, I recorded my voice, but then I'd go back and I'd add my music to the beginning and end.
Yeah.
But
are you going to do that for us?
Uh-huh.
Are you going to do that for
us? Yeah, I can help y'all do that.
Get us going and then we can linger and like do it on our own?
Yeah.
Because you've got some music that you want to put down and you want other people to consider those lyrics that you send to me, Christian, and Derek.
Oh, I don't know.
And this is, yes, you do. This is a platform to do that.
Can I go there?
Heck yeah. Yes. Okay, now we're hitting on something. Because it's our places of vulnerability that connect with people more than anything else. So when you say, can I do that? Yeah, that's probably where we need to go.
Yeah, I'm going to build a wall real quick around them.
Too late, man. I've already snuck inside. I know how to dig. I'm Dig Dug. Yeah, that's where it is. That's where it is. You ready to pause for the day?
Whenever you are. Yeah, probably. I think we've got enough accomplished to where we don't have to hurry.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and
take you. Yeah, you take them off.
Yeah, that was some chunks.
And you don't really even have to wear these. I think just part of it gives that feel because now you
you
hear your voice. You can tell if you're loud, too loud.
I want to work.
Yeah,
I do.
You ready to hit the button? I haven't stopped it yet.
That's my dude right there. See, that's my dude right there.
Because like y'all started talking and I was like, I'm missing this, and I just hit record. And I didn't tell y'all.
That's what
and then like 10 minutes later, you're like, dude, you're recording.
We were talking earlier. I listen to Conan O'Brien's podcast all the time, and he brings up Miles Davis all the time. And Miles Davis used to like yell at his producers and say, I want you recording when I pull in the parking lot.
Yeah, because you miss that stuff. Like, because there's times like I'll have people on the show, and like, you have that little banter just back and forth, and I'm like, we got to record, but we're missing stuff.
Man, that's downright mindful. You've been listening to Downright Mindful with your hosts, Matt Paris and Paul Salzville. Produced by Josh Morris. Intro and outro production by Derek Kinsey. You can find us wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. Thanks for listening.